This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Federal investigations seldom begin with an uproar. Internal rules keep fledgling probes on the down low, lest evidence or reputations be destroyed. Before elections, historically, the Justice Department is especially mum so as not to influence voters on the basis of mere suspicion. Not lately, though. Since the ascension of Attorney General Bill Barr, and especially in this election campaign, the Justice Department has been weaponized as a political tool for Donald Trump. Unproven and unfounded allegations are the warheads, and the delivery system is the agency's Department of Public Affairs. Former federal prosecutor Ankush Karduri wrote this week in Slate about the transformation of a historically circumspect Justice Department press office into a Trump propaganda machine. Ankush, welcome to On the Media.
Thank you for having me.
First of all, before Bill Barr and Trump, and let's say, not counting the criminal Nixon administration, how independent of politics was the Justice Department and the public affairs apparatus?
You know, there is an element of political work as part of every Justice Department at the level of priorities and directional movement of federal law enforcement, right? So one administration might focus on immigration, another might focus on white-collar crime. But that really was about it. And the Public Affairs Office served a fairly mundane role, circulating press releases or making people available to announce an indictment and the resolution to a criminal case, and perhaps also to announce like a major investigative initiative or the results of a major project.
My historical memory is that when you go to the Justice Department and ask if they're investigating something, they say, mind your own beeswax, we don't volunteer information about ongoing investigations.
That is true. There is an exception in Justice Department policy for matters of significant public concern to assure the public that the department is doing something about it. You know, a prototypical case to maybe put a finer point on it would be like a terrorist bombing or a school shooting, you know, maybe a racially motivated violent crime, right? Those are the sorts of cases where the government will say, look, we are looking into this. So years ago, the department looked into the civil rights compliance of the police department in Ferguson, Missouri, under President Obama and Eric Holder.
We have determined that there is cause for the Justice Department to open an investigation to determine whether Ferguson police officials have engaged in a pattern or practice of violations of the United States Constitution or federal law.
But the past 6 months sound nothing like that.
The Justice Department is dropping its criminal case against President Trump's former national security advisor, retired General Michael Flynn.
A shocking reversal in the criminal case of President Trump's longtime friend and ally, Roger Stone. It's led to a protest and charges of interference.
Attorney General William Barr's probe into the origins of the 2016 Russia investigation has now expanded into a criminal probe.
A highly public, constant commentary by the Attorney General and press releases from the Office of Public Affairs. Historically, this is an aberration, is it not?
It's definitely an aberration. These like kind of discrete one-off cases where the department is intervening for ways that at least appear to be designed to shore up the president's or the Republican Party's political interests or to further media narratives, that's highly, highly unusual. I think, and I have thought long and hard about this, I think quite possibly wholly unprecedented in the modern era.
The pre-election period has been especially fecund in terms of politicization of potentially criminal matters. Let's start most recently with the story last week from Luzerne County, Pennsylvania,
The U.S. Attorney for the Middle District of Pennsylvania, David Freed, announced that 9 military ballots were discovered in Luzerne County that were opened improperly. The announcement was made even though no charges have been filed, and that's something unusual for a federal investigation.
Now, the reason why we don't know that much about what actually happened is precisely because this information became public at an extremely early stage in the investigation process. I've never seen anything like it. A document that unilaterally announces an investigation that nobody knew about, nobody was asking about, involving a fact pattern that may not even involve a crime.
And you found the news coverage of this more or less okay. It explained the possibilities about what might have taken place that do not seem sinister. They also discussed potential sinister explanations, but I think generally the unlikelihood of political mischief. But you wrote in Slate that the nature of the mainstream coverage was essentially beside the point.
The apparent objective of the press release was not really to get it covered one way or the other so much in the mainstream press, but to inject it, I think, into this sort of conservative silo of media.
According to DOJ, several military ballots were, quote, discarded. Investigators have recovered a total of 9 ballots so far. Not surprisingly, the DOJ says an overwhelming majority of those ballots were cast for guess who? Donald Trump.
It excelled in its objective on that front. And I think for the purposes of Trump and Bill Barr, that's really what they're angling for, is to try to shift the terms of the narrative within this particular channel of the media ecosystem.
And now that the 9 discarded Trump ballots are part of the narrative of election 2020, we can be pretty certain that it doesn't matter what the results are of the local police investigation or the Justice Department investigation. Trump will cite them again and again and again as proof positive that what he's saying all along is true, that the Democrats are trying to rig and steal the election by destroying mail-in ballots meant for him.
They're sending millions of ballots all over the country. There's fraud. They found them in creeks. They found some with the name Trump. Just happened to have the name Trump just the other day in a waste paper basket.
He only really cares about the portions of a story, particularly the start of a story, that help him. And if it doesn't end the way he likes, he'll just discredit it or ignore it. I should also add, by the way, the 9 Trump ballots got revised down to 7. Over the course of the day, the department had to issue a revised press release correcting the number that had initially included as Trump ballots, which is another reason why you don't do this sort of thing, precisely because in an investigation, facts change constantly.
All right, so there's Luzerne County. Likewise, the recent announcement of charges of fraud relating to the Paycheck Protection Program, PPP, which was, the business arm of the Trump administration's stimulus efforts this year, that resisted oversight from the get-go. With that as the background, tell me about the Department of Justice press conference on the PPP fraud.
Months ago, the department announced that it was going to be looking into fraud in the PPP initiative. And a couple weeks ago, the department convened a press conference with senior officials in the department.
Today, the Criminal Division's Fraud Section, along with our law enforcement partners on this stage and elsewhere in this room, are announcing that as a result of law enforcement operations over the course of the last few days, the Criminal Division has now criminally charged more than 50 people who allegedly committed fraud to obtain money from the Paycheck Protection Program.
50 people is not some hallmark or touchstone in any Justice Department guidance. You know, when the Justice Department pursues initiatives aggressively, there are often dozens of people charged in things like this. So they convened this press conference, I think, on its face, solely to basically try to gin up some favorable coverage for an effort that had kind of been flailing a little bit, and for reasons that you described and some others, has some question marks around it.
So if the president were going into the election amid suspicions that this $1 trillion rescue fund was being used as a slush fund for political favoritism or anything of the like, this presumably was meant to make the administration look scrupulous and heroic in catching the bad guys.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because it does that, but it accomplishes a couple of other objectives too. You know, one is it portrays them as being on the ball concerning anything related to the pandemic. But there is a strong sort of conservative antagonism toward these sorts of programs generally, and a strong conservative theme that, you know, programs like this that are designed to help quote-unquote regular people are riddled with fraud. And for that reason, they're not worth doing in the first place. So I think that is not an element that we should entirely ignore here. And I think it's telling that while they have focused on this area of the stimulus work for potential fraud, we have not seen any work regarding other lending facilities, including Fed lending facilities, and fraud in those programs or in other major areas of pandemic-related fraud. Certainly, there have been some problematic cases that have emerged from this work, so I don't mean to entirely write it off. A lot of them have been failed efforts to defraud the program in what we would otherwise regard as pretty basic, crude bank frauds that would otherwise not get any attention, right? It would be the equivalent of basically submitting a false mortgage application. So a lot of them are like that. Others are cases that have involved some pretty sort of scintillating forms of expenses, like some cars and fancy jewelry and things like that.
I want to move on to the not especially legendary Operation Legend. This was supposed to be the Trump administration cavalry rushing in to save the Democratic-run cities from anarchy. Can you tell me about it?
Yeah, so this is an operation the department initiated a couple of months ago, and it was supposed to be a crackdown in response to what they called a sudden surge of violent crime in the country. They've been supposedly deploying, you know, increased federal law enforcement resources in certain cities.
Yeah, but it turns out not so much policing, just a lot of press releasing.
They've been, for at least the last month or so, issuing these daily press releases about cases that they have been pursuing as part of that work. I mean, the press releases are a very interesting reservoir of documents if you read them, and I do, because a lot of them describe crimes that are not trivial, but are the sorts of crimes that occur every day throughout the country that would otherwise get no national attention whatsoever. So one that I cite in the piece that I wrote includes someone who essentially got pulled over for driving somewhat recklessly and happened to have a firearm on him, but was a convicted felon. Now, this is illegal. It's very illegal. It can subject you to heavy criminal penalties to be a felon in possession of a firearm. But this is the sort of back pattern that is happening all day, every day, all over the country. So these press releases sort of read to me like this bizarre kind of federalized, like local police plotter. They're very interesting and weird documents.
Now, you were a federal prosecutor. When you see resources of an under-resourced Justice Department devoted to street crime, what do you think? I mean, how does it not go against the grain of everything you were taught about the priorities of the federal Department of Justice?
I would actually put something of a defense up in their favor a little bit on this. Now, I don't think that these cases should be promoted so heavily, nor should they be the focus of some intense resource-driven project. But cases like this, you know, a felon in possession, they do matter to people in their communities. So they are some of the cases that people like to see get attention. On the other hand, federal law enforcement resources are scarce, and the federal law enforcement apparatus is not the only law enforcement apparatus we have in this country, right? We have state and local police forces. And oftentimes for street crimes, what we would call low-level street crimes, like a felon in possession case, the federal government will defer to local police authorities and let them handle those sorts of cases. One of the things that's very strange about this is it's hard to detect how much of this reflects the real reallocation of federal law enforcement resources or a public relations campaign designed to promote a particular narrative that may or may not be actually tethered to either a real change in crime, much less a real change in federal day-to-day law enforcement resources.
One event that has been widely seen as having been what turned out to be a death blow to the Hillary Clinton campaign was the announcement by then FBI Director James Comey of reopening an investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails. As we inch closer and closer to Election Day, you know, it would surprise nobody if there were a similar October surprise that was unleashed on the electorate. How do we as news consumers discriminate between Justice Department propaganda and some genuine news development that should, in fact, make us rethink our choice for president?
That's such a critical and challenging question. I think that there are a couple of kind of rules of the road that I would kind of suggest. One is that there are a couple of topics, you know, that have attracted particular attention of the president, where I think announcements in those areas should be regarded presumptively very skeptically. One is regarding potential vote fraud, similar to the episode in Pennsylvania. I think if we hear announcements in that vein or on that subject, people should be initially very skeptical. The other is regarding the investigation being conducted by John Durham, the U.S. Attorney for Connecticut, who is investigating the investigators, looking into potential misconduct in the conduct of the Russia investigation. Now, Bill Barr has been, according to reports, pressuring Durham to do more to release findings or to charge people in the run-up to the election. So far, he's charged one person for altering an email. But I would not be surprised if we get more news on that front. And I think that's probably the top of the list that people are expecting and concerned about. So that's one area I would just strongly suggest that people on certain topics be very, very skeptical. The other is, I think it is important for people to look for certain hallmarks of good news stories in novel areas. So one of the things that I thought that mainstream outlets did quite well dealing with the ballot collection in Pennsylvania was they consulted and quoted prior DOJ officials who almost uniformly said this was very, very unusual. You know, a good story in the run-up to this election in any kind of fact pattern that appears to be unusual really should be not taking the department at face value, but consulting other people. And I say that, and it seems kind of obvious, but, you know, the department enjoys a very, very broad reservoir of credibility from the press and the public. And it is often the case that when they put out an announcement, it does get just filtered on to the public. And we have seen some of this, for instance, in the PPP fraud press conference that I mentioned. There were stories written that basically just filtered out that information and regurgitated it with little, if any, context learning.
You know, we often talk on this program about hammers and anvils. And I guess you could look at the expropriation of the public affairs function of the U.S. Department of Justice as an anvil by letting these stories get out there and get discussed in the press, well-covered or carelessly covered, doesn't matter. It becomes the anvil for Trump in particular and his proxies and his cronies and his attorney general to hammer on, to proliferate these sinister scenarios that they love to flog. Is that what's happening here? That these press releases are the anvils for lies?
I would say so. I mean, I think that they're an integral part of a communication strategy that is designed to mislead the public. And, you know, you say press releases, but I want to be clear that it's a little bit more than that. I mean, yes, on some level, it's just press releases, but it's also really the use of every tool that is available to a public affairs office. And, you know, at the extreme, you know, in the case of the Page and Strzok text messages, that was the sort of surreptitious dissemination of raw investigative material to journalists on the condition, in that case, that the journalists not disclose where they had gotten it from. I have no idea sitting here whether that's the only instance of something like that. So the press releases are the tip of the iceberg here, and I fear that a lot more is going on that we know nothing about.
Ankush, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Ankush Kardori is a writer, lawyer, and former federal prosecutor. Hey, stay tuned to your feed because later in the day, we will have another pod extra, this one about Tuesday's presidential debate.